to go to church and listen to that priest finishing his sermon by those words, saying the dirty Jews killed him. Let her go. That was, he told. I was standing over there and it was the tragedy of Jewish children. But you have to find some explanation to tell them why not to go to church. It means the child doesn't know anything positive about being a Jew. And the child does have no idea of 1800 years of church persecution of the Jew. Knows nothing. And those are the Jewish schools. Take kids in a yeshiva ktan, in a day school, I have no problem with them. They are the ones who will survive. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says in Chumash. He says, you who cling to Hashem, you'll survive. Now, after 60 years after we had, you know, when I came to America, the strongest schools, Jewish schools, were the Shalom Aleichem schools. You know about Shalom Aleichem school? Huh? You don't know anything. Are you from America? If you would have been in 1938, you would have known. It was the strongest, how do they call them? The arbitering. You know about the arbitering?
Arbitration?
No, arbitering means the circle of labor, the labor circle.
Yeah, they were the workman circle.
Workman circle.
Bunde.
Yeah, Bunde.
Arbitering.
Yeah, right, right. The arbitering. It was the workman circle, right. Now, you know that they had a tremendously strong system of schools, Yiddishism. And for them, Jewish history started with Mendel HaMecher Sforim and with Shalom Aleichem, who have been writers in Yiddish. They created a Jewish literature, a literature in Yiddish. And Shalom Aleichem was really a genius. Mendel HaMecher Sforim was anti-Semite, but Shalom Aleichem was not an anti-Semite, and a genius. So, that's where the Jewish history and Jewish culture started with Shalom Aleichem. There was a net of schools all over the United States. Because the first immigrants that came from the East, they were all laborists. The same as here in the kibbutzim. The same as here in Knesset, the Marach. It's all labor. And it's all labor because the origin is, because in Russia, in Tsarist Russia, a Jew could not feel equal to a Russian peasant. The Jew in Russia, well, in Western Europe, Jews had already some recognition as equal people, but not in Tsarist Russia. In Tsarist Russia was, you know, the territory of Russia. Russia at that time were millions and millions of Jews. The bulk of the Jewish people were in Russia. Now the only place where a Jew was recognized as a human being was among the revolutionaries in the underground. And they really wanted, they appreciated Jewish brains. As a matter of fact, the October Revolution was Jewish brains. If not, you wouldn't have Communist Russia today is not what we like. Some of them, and then they used to send, Tsar used to send to Siberia. Some of them from Siberia got out to America. And they established the unions. They established the entire labor movement in America. Well, our Jews from Russia. And some of them came here and they established the Zionist label. So today, the forward is already closed. You know about the forward? That was the daily, labor's daily. Closed in just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Closed up.
Yeah.
In America. Who is from New York? From the city of New York. So you know what the Stuart Park? Another East Broadway and Canal Street meeting? Huh?
Yeah.
Big building with the forward building over there. It's taken over the Chinese now. But when I was there, when I came in 1938, it was too late for, I came already too late. The Yom Kippur balls, I think, were not already at that time. Yom Kippur balls were pre-First World War. You know about this? Huh? They made special celebrations at Yom Kippur, like carnivals against Yom Kippur. But when I came, this was out already. But they used to go around and this building is short park in front of it. They used to go around shadows for the labor pickets for the center of the labor movement, or the Jewish labor movement. That big forward building. Now it's closed up, it's all. Yeah?
I can tell you that the workman's circle for Chicago finally closed down. They left and they could be sure to put it over and they didn't pull them close up.
This is what is going on. No, they have a school like we see. Here the Chinese took over. The poverty of the world took over the Chinese. Now at that time they had camps, Burberry camp. They had camps. The Jewish children were sent to those schools. We don't have the children, we don't have the schools. Today the schools are out. In Los Angeles, there's still one building, a little building which they used to have. They try to have a kindergarten today for them. The arbitrary, also, you want to say something?
Yeah.
I didn't give you a chance all the way. All right.
It really bothers me. I don't understand why me and why Herbie and not his sister. I mean, they're both ignorant. Why was I given life? Why was my sister there? Emeka or these other friends of mine buried in the schmutz of America? How was I plucked out? And my sisters, my own sisters, were eaten alive by America. They're still, it's pitiful. The 60s, everything else. There's nothing left. Why was I kept there? Why not them? They didn't know anything either.
Tell you, I'll tell you that Mishnah. The Mishnah about that story with the uncle who makes a vow. Did I tell you that Mishnah? Huh? You are my house. I got that. The uncle makes a vow, he'll never come close to his niece. That's the story. The story is that niece was an orphan girl, neglected. So the neighbors figured out that if they want to fix up that girl, let their uncle marry her. So they started begging the uncle to marry that girl. They didn't like it. So they nagged him so much, they needed him so much. He jumps and makes a vow. He'll never come. The neighbors don't give up. So they go to Rabbi Shmuel. They say to Rabbi Shmuel, they come to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi, Can you untie the bow? He says, send me the girl. Send him the girl. So Rabbi Shmuel says to his family, you better take care and dress her, give her a clean dress, dress her up, clean her up. And the Gemara says she had a tooth missing. So he paid for a golden tooth. At that time was a golden tooth style. Paid for a golden tooth. After she was all dressed up, Rabbi Shmuel called her in and let her sit at the table with him. And he calls in the uncle. And I said, Bni, Mizuna died his son, he says. Did you make a vow not to come close to that girl? He says, Rabbi, no. So Rabbi Shmuel said, fine. Now I can untie you, Yavo, because Yavo was by my mistake. And Bocha Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Shmuel started to cry. The woman said, Nois Yisroya Noisi, Jewish children are beautiful. And Asher Aniyus Minav Losan is the poverty which makes them look ugly. This is a tragedy today. Jewish children are fine, they're all fine. It's the poverty of education. And the poverty of education in America was tremendous. Now, one of the miracles which are happening today is that revival of Torah. And it's hitting more people and more people and more people. Somebody is lucky, he's already somebody who he. And not everyone has the law. It says in Prophet, not everyone will have.
Mark?
Mark? Yeah. No, it's something else.
Let me
say this. I myself try not to worry. I am trying to figure out what I can do about it. And I'm going and doing it. And then I start flying. The same thing is, we have in our families, you are not the only one. I'll tell you, my family, when I came here, I was thinking, all that remained of my family is myself and my wife. And I had a brother in New York whom I pulled him out after the war. And I brought him to America at that time. And his family. Now the brother is not alive. His son is not alive. Only his daughter. Then I discovered some family in London. I found a cousin's children in South Africa. That's all. Here in Yerushalayim and in Haifa, I have cousins. I have their children. They grew here in Israel. As part of the labor movement, I have no communication. I cannot communicate. I went to visit them at their kibbutz. There's no communication, and I don't go anymore. This has happened, it's to my family. This has happened in any family. In their case, I really don't know. In America, it's different. In America, what we can do is just be friendly. Be friendly, be warm. Because they deserve it. And always remember that story about the sun and the wind who took a bet. You know that story? Huh? So don't try to be windy. And people resent if other people try to correct them. People resent it. Just caressing. And today, people are coming back to Yiddishkeit in the most miraculous way. So, we don't give up people. I don't give up my cousins. I don't have an approach to them. You have a better approach than I. Because the American has not so much anti as the Israeli has. The American is ignorant. You follow what I say. But let me go back to what I was talking before. I was talking, saying that when it comes to Jewish behavioral theory, there is a laboratory. And the laboratory is, history tells us which segment of the Jewish people survived and which one has a part in the eternity of the Jewish people and which one is just a temporary thing and disappears. This is the only thing which can be proven. But it's a long time laboratory. You look 60 years back, you look 100 years back, and then you can find it. Then you can discover which is the natural potato, which one is the synthetic potato. In other theories, in all those theories of history, of how old the world is, of how all this, it's just speculation. But the only thing is that it's a weakness that we have. We accept for true things which we imagine other people think. You know that?
Say that again.
You see that? We accept as true things which we imagine other people think. Other people are accepting. We accept people, the entire medicine avenue is built on this principle. Make you believe that everybody believes it, then you'll believe it. It's an interesting thing. I have here a text of Rambam, in a letter. He says in that letter, I am going to tell you of a serious sickness, human sickness. Anything that they'll find written in books, their first assumption is it's true. That's a letter of my manager, the letter to the community of Marseille. If somebody wants that, I'll give you that copy. Somebody can read it. That's a letter to me. I can't. And that's the whole thing. Of if you read something in a newspaper, you believe it. Why do you believe it? Because you figure that you are not the only one reading that paper. There are other 1,000 people. And those 1,000 people most probably will believe it. So will I be a fool and not believe it? So I believe it too. That's a medicine avenue trick. So, and this is with so many scientific theories. And the separation of church and state in America has done a lot of harm because the people don't translate it right. Now, there is that University of Loma Linda. Are you familiar with it? Loma Linda, California, the university. It's a Seventh-day Adventist. So they were fighting to have creationism as a theory which is being taught in the schools parallel to evolution. And they have a fight. They have not won it yet. So therefore, evolution is true because the government said that's what you teach. And everybody, and if everybody teaches it, most probably it's true. That's what's going on. Now coming back to your question. The same I started saying about that there are things which we cannot prove directly, but indirectly we can prove that it couldn't be otherwise. Remember I said it before. Now, if somebody, the same, how did I say that it couldn't be otherwise? My feet were invented by somebody who is a great inventor. To have this, let's say. Huh? When did I say it? When I recognized how the dentures go. When will I know that each and every word in the Torah is divine, the divine origin? When I'll know it, and then I'll see it couldn't be human, then I understand. How do I know Torah min ha-shamayim? Because the wonders in Torah are so great that it couldn't be human. But in order to know this, you have to learn. And the more you learn, and you said it yourself. All right, I think we can start here, right? Now, that evening, we're talking more, not about the words, but about that the Torah is a, that the Torah is such a divine origin. And I said at that time, if we want to realize it by learning, we'll find out that it could not be a human wisdom. So in order to realize this, it's learning. And in learning, we find out that it could not be man-made. Huh?
What about the idea that Abraham came to the knowledge of the whole Torah by himself, logically figured out?
Yeah, very good. That's a good question. Okay. So, what is your question, really? You are saying that Avraham Avinu came to the entire biological.
Right.
So, what do you mean to prove by it?
I don't want to say it, but I mean, I suppose you could think if Avraham could come to the wisdom in the
then
himself, then what's to say that it comes from divine inspiration? Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I know how to handle this. I know exactly how to handle it. I know how to watch it not to break. Would you know that I invented it? Would you say I invented it? Now, if somebody learns from the world ways of behavior, which is very normal, and because we really are like fools. The way we behave like fools. We behave like children. A child will find a tool. He'll think it's a toy. And he'll use it as a toy. We go around in a world which it's so, everything is a map. Now, it's not that like a marble. Everything is in marble. And all we're concerned, we play around like children. We find something, we use it. What is childish about it? Maturity is trying to find, if you find a type, if you're a mature person, you would not, if you find this, if you're a mature person, will not try to figure out how you can use it. What use it can make of it. Because I'll try what use it can make of it. You can use it as a hammer. Hit nails in the wall with it. Why not? But it's not smart. It's not intelligent. If you find something like this, you'll try to find out what does it produce. And then you'll use it knowing what it produces. And what does it mean? What does it produce? It means for what purpose was it made? Is that clear? So that's why I say we are behaving like children. We're behaving like fools. Because if you go today to a science laboratory, the laboratory doesn't care for the function. The laboratory cares what can we get out of it. That's all. It's clear what I'm saying. And now, if somebody would try to learn the function, Rambam says that you can measure the intelligence of a person by the amount of functions he can find in the creation. By the amount, if you find something and he can say, what is the purpose of it? For what function was it created? That's what Rambam says. The intelligence. This would be the measuring tool for intelligence. Now, therefore, let's say if Avraham Avinu has come to the functions, this doesn't mean that he knows what's behind it, but at least we can guess the function. If I'll find this and I'll play around with it, maybe I'll also find that it's a sound producing thing. Maybe? Yeah, I was talking. So, therefore, I didn't see any contradiction in what you asked.
I didn't want to bring it up as a contradiction.
Yeah. Yes?
A slightly different question. The Torah has been written by scribes for the last 2,000 years.
Right.
Scribes are human beings. Human beings are liable to commit errors.
Right.
What's your feeling on the possibility of some written error in the scrolls that we have?
Now, this is a serious question. But on the other hand, we have a Masechta. I don't know whether you're familiar with it.
The traditional text.
No, the Masechta is a cross count of letters. And how many, the same word, how many times is it repeated in the entire Tanakh? And you have certain controls. Together with the text, are given also certain controls. If you count the Sefer Torah, and there is a number of two letters, and you find one letter too much, one letter less, you'll know that there is a mistake here. This is what the Masechta is. And there is an entire Masechta literature in this. And Rashi says that the first to establish that Masechta was King Solomon. Yeah.
So what about before King Solomon?
Huh?
I'd say, what about before King Solomon? What's the problem doing
here? Most probably they also had something. But he made it complete. That's what Rashi said. All right, we'll go back to what I said before. So we're talking about divine origin of Torah. So I'm repeating what I said at that time, that this can be proven only indirectly, not directly. Indirectly means that we can prove that it couldn't be otherwise. In mathematics, you have that method of proving, you know that, of bringing the opposite to absurdity. So they're the same thing. So this is how it could be proven. But this can prove only the divine origin of the Torah. And now there is a difference between contents and between the form of the contents. The form are the words. Because you can express the same idea in different styles, in different words. Now that's the next question. The next question, are the words also of divine origin? The Ramban says, in the Sefer Torah, each and every word is of divine origin. The Ramban says that the Sefer Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu by taking a dictation. Moshe Rabbeinu was taking a dictation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for each and every word. Not for the prophets. The prophet says, it says that each and every prophet had his own style, which means the content is of divine origin. But the formulate it in words was human. Huh. That's what the Ramban said. Again, can we prove it? The Ramban statement that it says each and every word from the first letter of Bereshis until the last letter of any Kodesh Baruch Hu, each and every letter and each and every word is a divine dictation. That's what Ramban said. Yes?
A question, is it possible that any of this text existed prior to the dictation?
That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, we don't understand what it is, but 2,000 years before the creation of the world, it was the Torah. That's what the Gemara says. Now, going to the text, the Ramban says, Kol HaTorah Kulo Shmoysav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The entire Torah, the Sefer Torah, is names of divine names, Hashem. And he says the Kedusha, the sanctity of the Sefer Torah is because of those names. That's what the Ramban says. Now, how do we understand this? As a matter of fact, you'll find in some Sforim, Rashi, Ramban himself quotes the Rashi. It says, Rashi in Gemara is giving us one of the Shemos of Hashem, which consists of 72 combinations of three letters.
So Rashi gives that actual name?
Yeah, Rashi gives it. And I'll tell you, if you have a Chumash Shmos, I'll show it. There is no Chumash Shmos here.
Rashi
is talking about Hashanahs. And Sukkot, and in the middle of Hashanahs, there are two words, Ani Vahoy Hashia. Remember? We don't know the translation. Ani Vahoy Hashia. We don't know the translation. Ani doesn't mean I say, I Hashiano. But Ani means I. So Rashi says, those are two of the 72 combinations of the great name of Hashem. And where are they? So Rashi says, this is in B'Shalach, the chapter in Shmos. The chapter is 14, and the Pesukim are 19, 20, and 21. Each one of those Pesukim has 72 letters. If you count them, you can find another. You'll find that each one of those has 72 letters, and the combinations are the first letter of the first pasuk, the last letter of the second, and the first of the third. The first of the first, the last of the second, and the first of the third is one combination. Next combination is the second of the first, the second last of the second we are going backward. That's what Rashi is saying. And Rashi finds, Ani Vohoi. Vohoi is the first combination. And Ani is the 37th combination. 37th is splitting it in half. That's what Rashi says. And this will say Ani Vohoi. That's what Rashi is saying. Now, doesn't make any sense to us. And to have some idea what it is talking about is, I don't know whether you say it here in Yeshiva, Anim Zmiros. You say it here?
No.
Huh? No. This is a poem.
Yeah.
A Shabbos after. Huh? Right. And over there is a statement. Dimu oischa velekfi yeshcha. They imagined you not according to what you are, but they compared you according to your productions. Dimu oischa velekfi yeshcha v'yashvucha lefi ma'aseh. Which means we have no, the only idea we can have about Hashem is through his ma'asim, through his productions. As a matter of fact, this is not limited to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If we have opinions about each other, it's exactly the same. Because really, people are talking to each other and people don't see each other. If I see your nose, I don't see you. The personality we don't see. How do I know about a fellow whether he's smart and about another fellow whether he's stupid? How do I know? I've never seen them. I've seen their noses, I've seen their faces, but I have not seen the personality. And it's the nose is not, neither smart nor stupid. And how do I know about a person? Conclusions. I have conclusions. If I hear a person, and most of the times he says something smart, so I conclude most probably he's a smart fellow. The conclusions. Huh? So why should we expect differently about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, about the creator of the world? All the idea about him. We can know his creation. The Rambam says, the more you know the creation, the more you can know about Hashem. It's not modern laboratory. They don't care for the creation either. They care only what they can get out of it. That's a different story. Now, do we know the creation? Don't. Because matter we don't know. We know forms, not matter. We have no concept of pure matter. Now is that clear? Huh? Our concept is forms and stages. Take electricity. We don't know what electricity is, but we know after a certain degree, we know what electricity can produce. And we don't know all yet. There have been so many scientific generations who knew electricity and didn't know electronics. And now when we know electronics, we still don't know what's wrong. And it may not be the end. But this is still the products. But what is electricity? We don't. You'll split the atom. And you'll have electrons. And you have... But what is it? So again, it's a movement that you can... But the what it is, in Lashon HaKodesh, the essence of a thing is called mohus. And mohus is a combination of two words. Mohu, what is it? The question mark. The essence in Lashon HaKodesh is called the question mark of it. But you don't know. What is it? It is, it all exists by a wish of the Creator. He wished, and this is the deepest essence of everything, is a command of the Creator. If we would be able to go to the root of anything that exists, the root is a command of the Creator. Commands are combinations of words, combinations of letters. So each and every combination of letters, which are called Shemus HaKadosh, are those combinations which, if we would know nature, and we would come to the root of every part, we would come to our combination of that. Because in our creation, a wish is expressed in a word, and a word is a combination of letters. And there is and this is what the Ramban says. Is it clear what I said on that? Huh?
I don't understand about letters, how everything goes with letters. What do you mean letters, like a...
Letters. Ani, Rahoi, those letters, combinations of letters. But the root of everything would be, if we could conceive it, we would conceive this is a combination of letters which represent the command of Hashem that this thing should exist. Yeah.
If I understand reality, well, yeah. Hashem also thinks in words. Hashem doesn't think in concepts of...
No, I wouldn't dare say it.
Does Hashem even, you know...
No, I wouldn't dare say it. Because we have not... But as it comes to us it would come in letters.
Rambam said that the world is... 22
stones. Not the Rambam. The Sefer Yetzirah says it. Right. Yeah, but this is all in and the way we see it, the way we can see it, it's only in, it's leading up to the deepest where the human concept can reach. But it's still a human concept.
But does man then have the ability to understand more?
Huh?
You said earlier that man's understanding of the essence of Torah, man can't really understand what is going on in this. Man has the, what does man understand? Does man have the ability to understand more of a Kodesh Baruch Hu through understanding what creation is and understanding the essence of creation, man, the trees, the hills, and so forth?
A person, that's why we are called moving things. Because we can always go further. which is true. But on the other hand, I heard from my father, Zechon Levracha, he said in the name of the Chofetz Chaim, says, whatever the Goy knew from the Torah, from it, and whatever the Rambam knew from it, and whatever Rav Ashi knew, whatever Hillel knew, and whatever the prophets knew, and whatever Moshe Rabbeinu knew from the Shiva, from the Torah, is so little compared with the Torah itself that Torah is Hashem Tmimo. It has not been touched yet. He said, so, but the only thing, if I am standing at the seashore and I see the ocean, I know that it's very distant, but it's very far. My eye cannot even imagine how far it is. The Torah is the wisdom of the creation. And so we can talk in human terms. And if we talk in human terms, also we are coming to such depth which we cannot imagine. But it's still, it's a human, it's within human limits. Yeah. So this is the Ramban's, but in any case, this was the Ramban's statement that the entire Sefer Torah is names of HaKadosh Baruch. Therefore, according to this, it could not be, the wording could not be of a human origin. Could not be, because it's much deeper.
How can we use the words of the Torah so loosely? If each word in the Torah is one of Hashem's names, and if we use it, we're like using Hashem's name in vain. Every time
no,
we say...
No. Now we are talking about Hashem in vain, so you have to know first, we are going to the halachas. The halach is which shame qualifies for Shem Levatola are only seven. And even those seven, we have to know what is Levatola, what is in vain. In vain is anything which is not for the purpose of Torah or Tefillah or an oath. Because it says in Chumash, you can take a note with the name of Hashem. Except for a note, anything which serves, which is not for the purpose of Torah or Tefillah, would be Levat Torah. We have the Tosfos says that we are more careful unless we see a full bracha, we see a full posik, we don't say it. But in learning, I mean, Tzadadin, even if you say the shame in learning, without saying a full posik would be all right. But if it says, we stay away from it. But this is... But the other, all those other shemas, they, halacha, they don't have a din of underlined. There is something else. The Rambam has in one of his responses, he is talking about the script and something which was bothering me before I saw this, because there is an old Hebrew script. Maybe some people are familiar with it. Some encyclopedias have it. The ancient Hebrew script. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which has no similarity to Aaron of Peace. And the coins of the Hashmonaim. You know the Hashmonaim, their coins were, that script wasn't their coins. And I was always wondering, that ancient script, how come that as recent as the Hashmonaim is there? Then I found one of the responsa from he writes that we stood away from using the Ksava Shuris, that script of the Sefer Torah, because it was given for holy purposes and we did not want to use it for non-holy purposes. And he says, this is why the Hashmonaim and their coins, they use that script because this is not non-holy, I don't know how to say it. No, not. Huh? Secular is not the word for it. Secular. It's used for practical purposes, but not for Torah or Tefillah. So the Rambam says we have been so sensitive that since this was given, that the Torah is written with it, we did not want to use it for other purposes. That's what the Rambam said. By the way, the entire period of the second Commonwealth of the Seth, the only Aramaic was spoken, not Hebrew. Are you familiar with this? Huh?
Was it when they talk to the walls and they ask them not to speak Aramaic because everybody understood it, but instead of speaking Hebrew, or was it the other way around?
The other way around. But this was the first, during the first act. That was Chazkiyah and Sancheriv. But during the second temple, here's that story. A Babylonian married a Jerusalem girl. The Aramaic that they were speaking was different dialects. Now a cucumber, butzin. Are you familiar with it? A cucumber. Butzin means a cucumber in the Babylonian dialect, means a candle in the Yerushalmi dialect. If you'll open the Yerushalmi, you'll find that it's a different dialect. The Shas Yerushalmi also. There were always misunderstandings because of the dialects. And one day he said she should prepare him a few bits in cucumbers. They want to have cucumbers or something. She doesn't know what is a boitzin in her dialect. Boitzin is a candle. He comes home to eat, beautiful table, candles are burning, nothing to eat. He says, what is this? She said, that's what you asked me. So he gets angry and he says, go break them over the door. Throw them out. A door, a gate. How is a gate in Boba? Boba, in Aramaic.
Boba.
A gate. Every your generation the Boba. Break them over the door. She is a simple woman. Bobo. The rabbi of the city was Bobo Van Bute. So she goes straight to the Mishmeret. Bobo Van Bute says it's here over there. And here a woman comes in with two candles and breaks them over his head. And he doesn't get excited. He says, what is this? So she says, I don't know, but my husband told me to do this. Oh, he says, you're such a fine woman. You carry out what your husband tells you. He says, I wish you should have two sons like me. That's the story. The Gemara tells about the story how the husband handled problems. So that problem. Now, this is Bobo Mambuto. If you learn by a basra, but you learn by a basra chesk sabbatim, right? You didn't learn from the beginning. Right at the beginning, I think that Gimel, in the story with Bob Van Butte, that he is the man who was blinded by Herod. Herod made him blind. That's Bobo. Now, Herod was at least 100 years before the destruction of the temple. And here, what he was speaking in Jerusalem at that time. He was speaking in Aramaic dialect, a deep Aramaic dialect. And it may be also out of that respect. They did not want to use the language of the Torah for other purposes. The same as the Rambam says for the script.
Maybe it's not true today, unless the Hebrew language today is so far from real Hebrew that it's...
That it was introduced without respect, definitely. If somebody knows the entire history and the history of what happened here, it was designed just the opposite. Yeah.
There may be a lot of sort of ideals that you can get out of the Rambam's statement.
Yeah.
But not a clear historically.
Yeah.
The Ketav Ivri was formed because of the stone cutting alphabet. It's an alphabet cutting the
stone. Fine.
It's a series of direct strikes.
Fine.
Whereas the Ketav Amari that we study is with the pen.
Right. It's no contradiction. When it was invented, it didn't have a Torah yet. And it was invented, it's fine. But we are talking, how come that as late as the Hasmonean, they used it? They used it for that reason. The same thing is during the first temple, They used Hebrew. You quoted to me that from Tanakh, that they used Hebrew, not Aramaic. Because they were not exposed to it, they didn't have a substitute. After 70 years in Babylon, they already had a substitute for Hebrew. So therefore, they were free to use that substitute for anything which is civil. For civil purposes. That's the same thing. And this is also the same. They had a substitute, they used it. There is no contradiction.
So you're saying the Hasmonean used the ancient script
right.
As a means of showing their...
Their respect. Yeah, their respect. Yeah. Because otherwise I couldn't understand it. Because I know that it's very ancient. And I was wondering, the Rambam explained it. They said they did it for that reason. So there is a way of respect. But when we learn Chumash, we have to know this. That Torah is really endless. The depth is endless. But let me tell you another Rashi. Maybe this will be it. Rashi says at the beginning of Bereishis. Rashi says an explanation to the pasuk Yirakia b'sicham, and let there be a firmament in the middle of the water. So Rashi says that firmament is exactly in the center between the lower waters and the upper waters. Rashi. Comes the Ramban and says, this, what Rashi says, is one of the most hidden statements of the Torah. Don't expect me to explain it, because even those who know should not explain it. Even more so myself, the Ramban says. And he says he doesn't know. Now the question is, why did Rashi write it? If it's that deep, I have to say something when I'm talking about Seder Satir. Huh?
Foundation?
No, Seder is not Yisoder. Seder Satora. Seder means the secret Satora. The secrets. Secrets, yeah. And this, people think it's some kind of mysticism. It's a misconcept. Yeah, but there are secrets. What is secrets? The secrets are vast, so simple. Would you go into a nursery school or to a kindergarten and would you teach mathematics over there? Why not? Huh?
You wouldn't understand it.
Isn't it discrimination?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
It is. Huh? Yeah. So, what is the UCLA having? No. They, not UCLA. MIT? No. Not MIT. I'm talking that there's a group who is fighting for liberties of everyone. ACLU, right. So the ACLU would complain on this. Discrimination. Huh?
So we make discriminations every day, like choose the peppers instead of tomatoes.
So the trouble is that the tomatoes, do the tomatoes have a defendant? the tomatoes don't complain. But if there's a little kid, who has to ask me to cross the street for him. That's discrimination. Why doesn't he give him the freedom to cross by himself? I mean, that's for the Israeli. But you agree that you cannot teach mathematics in the nursery school. You agree with me?
Yeah, most of them understand. Maybe one out of a million.
Right. So, but it doesn't mean that the kids will never learn mathematics. They are going on, and being educated, more educated, until they reach the stage when they can learn mathematics. Is that correct? Now, why should the Torah be different? The Torah does also mathematics. And while we are in nursery school, it's not for us. And this is the Seder Satora. This is the... And the Mishnah is talking about it. To whom do you have to teach? How people should be prepared for it. But there is no mysticism, there's nothing. The only thing is it's very deep. You have to prepare. The Rambam says in one place that the purpose of Talmud is just to sharpen the brains in order to bring the brains closer to learn those things. That's what Rambam says. Says in the introduction to Mishnah.
The Ramban is one of the masters of the secrets.
The Ramban.
The Ramban.
I'm talking about Ramban. Okay. But Ramban says the same thing. Yeah.
Though we might not understand the principles of the mathematics, we could still see the results when it's created into, when it's transformed into a bridge or a space shuttle or a rocket ship.
Right.
So we can see the genius in the mathematics, whatever sciences there are.
Yeah.
But if someone has this hidden, deep understanding of Torah that's not perceivable directly to someone that's ignorant of that information, they
we also see the results. We also see the results. This is the result. This is the result. Everything that exists. You should know that Torah is a replica of the universe. Pardon?
Could you said earlier that the wisdom of the world is in the Torah. Now the Torah is a replica of the universe.
Yes.
Please explain more. I'm fascinated but confused.
I'll tell you. Yeah. There's nothing confused. We learn, and the more we learn, we find it. But let's say if you buy a car, to get over the car, you are getting a manual. Now, if you are a mechanic too, you are getting not only a manual, you are getting also all the...
Repair manual.
The repair manuals, right. And the repair manuals give you almost each and every part. Huh? And now, This is exactly how we are in this world. We have to have a manual. We cannot go around and drive that car on at nowhere like drunkards. So there are two manuals. One is an approximate manual, not a precise manual. And this is the human conscience. It's hard to talk today about the human conscience because it has been so corrupted that it almost has no similarity to a natural one.
To a what?
To a natural. Is that clear what I say? Because people, human consciousness are a lot of intuition. But our mind is working so fast and so deep that it's very hard to place our minds. There are some things that the mind is figuring out. There are some things that we have in nature. We are born with, like axioms. Axioms we are born with, we can't explain them. Then there are other things. We always think with somebody else's mind. You know that? People read a paper, they believe it. Why do you believe it? Because when you read that paper, you assume there are another 10,000 people reading the same paper. They must probably believe it. So will I be a fool and not believe it? So I'm really copying what I think other people are thinking. This is how ethics is being shaped. We have a natural guide for ethics. Ethics are rules of behavior. But besides our natural intuition, we are so much influenced by what other people think and by what is accepted that the natural guidance that we have is covered, is buried under public acceptance of other things. That's why I said that our, especially today, when anything which is crazy, anyone has to come out with some crazy idea and an insanity, they'll right away create for him a chair in the universe. This is what's going on today. Therefore, it's today the human conscience is very hard to use as a guide. But normal human conscience is a guide for behavior.
What is the natural
sentence
of the human conscience?
I say the natural human conscience. But our natural human conscience is covered up with so much of public acceptance that it doesn't come out. Now, let me give you an example. What's bad with lying? To say a lie, what's bad about saying a lie?
You got to remember more than one story.
That's not convenient. But what's bad?
Mislead other people.
Huh?
Mislead
other people. So what's wrong with misleading other
people? Well, they may do something they wouldn't have otherwise done. But...
So why do you care for them?
Well, are you talking about person or are you talking about...
What is objective? What is objective? And why should I be concerned about it? That's...
Get a few hours.
Huh?
I mean, you're talking basically about the questions of how a society keeps together and function.
Yeah.
If you have people being honest, and they accept other people to be being honest, and they can rely upon it.
You look at the It's a good thing you don't have a wristlet. You are looking at it.
Well, I mean, that's a symbol.
Yeah.
I have a watch.
Yeah. At least your watch is good. Sorry. I'll tell you something. Being honest, well, we spoke about it. If my motivation in being honest is to contribute to an honest society, because if I'm not honest, society would not be honest. It would be very terrible for me to live in a society which is not honest. So therefore, my contribution to produce an honest society is my honesty. This is as far as the social ethics go. But here is that story. I have such a beautiful story. Some little kids were in a poor little village, in a Jewish village, settled, and they decided they are going into business. Business, they'll produce lemonade. Summertime, and so they will produce lemonade. Somebody taught them how to produce it. They were working a whole day and they made a barrel of lemonade. And tomorrow morning, they'll bring the barrel to the street, they'll sell glasses of lemonade, they'll become Rockefellers. Fight. Yeah. Now, one of those kids starts thinking, sure, the lemonade is so good for business. But why should the rich people taste it? I also want to taste a little. But he's afraid other kids will lynch. So he waits until midnight. Everybody's asleep. And he goes out in the dark. Nobody around. With a glass. Takes a glass of lemonade. It's tasty, it's a pleasure. But it's less limited in the barrel. So there's another barrel standing with water or something over there. So he takes from the glass and fills up. So barrel is full. But that kid didn't know. Each and every dose of those kids had the same thing. And each one had his chance. Next morning, they came to sell lemonade. The first glass lemonade they sent was already a disaster because it so happened that the next barrel had laundry water, soap. So now it was, this is exactly how social honesty would work. Because I would figure, really, theoretically it's fine, I should be honest because that's my contribution to an honest society. Then, when I have a chance to make a fortune by not being honest, I will figure out, I'll take a glass of lemonade. Sure, I'll take a glass of lemonade. But everybody is the same. So, this is not enough reason.
Yeah, but it's not a reason for him not to lie, or the first person not to lie, because he got a taste of lemonade.
Right, right. So each and every one the same. The answer is a very interesting answer. The greatest gift that a human being has is the machinery of communication. Now let's stop for a moment and think, must have been given to me for a function. So, what function have I that gift? So how do you figure out a function? If you find a tool and you want to know the function, you see what you can produce with it. So why was I given the tools of communication? Let's see what I can produce. I can produce two things. I can produce convenience. If I would like to have a glass of tea If I cannot communicate, I have to go and then get the water and put it on the fire and make the fire and boil it. If I can communicate, I can ask somebody and they'll bring me a glass of tea. It's a communion. There is something else too. The human brain is producing information, producing knowledge, producing everything. If we would not be able to communicate to the outside world, all the creation of the Rambam, we wouldn't have. All the creation of Newton, we wouldn't have. Is that clear? Which means that there is the use of communication is to share with the outside world what is being produced in our minds and in our brain. Now let's see if somebody is lying. Which of those two functions is he in line, in straight line, and with which of those two functions is in opposition? For convenience, it's straight. But if it's not for convenience, if the function would be to share with the outer world what is going on in our brains, we are just breaking it. We are just acting against that function because we share which is not in our mind, which means it's a non-natural use of a natural gift. Do I make myself clear? The conscience rings a bell. The conscience would tell you that lying is not good. Not everyone would figure out why, but he would feel it's not good. That's what the conscience is. Comes Ike, President Eisenhower, and makes a public statement at a press conference. They caught him in lying. And he makes a public statement, what's wrong to lie? Ike made that statement. That statement has reduced America, has brought America down. That was the first statement of a person in that position to say openly that there is not wrong in life. He killed the conscience. Yeah. So I'm just giving you an illustration what conscience is. Conscience rings the bell. The same as hunger rings the bell. But that's one guide. That guide is not precise, but it's a guide.
That guide is being buried.
Today it's buried, but I mean even the natural guide is also not precise, but it's approximate and it's enough. Approximations are good. You build a bridge with approximations. It's clear what I say. It's fine. But it's approximate. A guide of precision is the term. Why don't we understand? We just follow. We just follow and we can't go wrong. But the only thing is, as we follow, in the meantime, we are getting more and more information too. What time is it now?
It's 2 minutes of time.
So, why are you fighting me? Taking out the air, taking out the back, but it's 11 o'clock. When is it then? So, we can afford another few minutes.
I have a question on your smooth. Can I ask you
before? And before you can ask, but I'll tell you anyway, this cannot be exhausted tonight. But we're talking, right?
That's what I meant.
Huh?
That's what I meant when I said.
Right. So, I will come back to your question. He has a question too. And say, but we should remember maybe to be zapping him.
All right. In the 30 days prior to Passover this year,
yeah.
I'll be living in 3 different places.
Yeah.
Does that mean as I each leave each place, I have to move?
Yeah.
Now you have to put
them in. Yeah, but now, huh?
But
now you can.
I'm not going to be the sole person living in any of these places. In other words, I'm sharing them with someone else.
And they are going to remain. They are going to remain.
So
will they make the biggest comment?
Well, they will make. Well, I'm sure that one will be at the yeshiva here. I'm sure they will go.
Yes, and then you make. Yeah, actually, you have to make the biggest comment.
Right.
No, have to make yourself.
But how do I know whether he's going to be in the room?
You can always ask one of the brachim to make the biggest comment. Better than that woman to make a mistake. All right, now what's your question?
My question is a little off now,
yeah.
Off the subject, but I was just curious about how we should handle, let's say, the situation in the territories and dealing with the Arabs and moving in and you know, building settlements there,
yeah.
And things like that. How should we, you know, there's two ways of doing everything. How should we do it?
I don't
know. And our next guest, Menachem Begin.
Right.
I said our next speaker, Menachem Begin.
Menachem Begin, and he may know what you mean.
Well, he'll have an answer.
Yeah. Ways of Providence. And what I mean by ways of Providence is that the human being has total freedom in his ethical action. And that's why he's responsible for his action. But still, Hashem is manipulating it in some way. What's the meaning? Yosef says to his brothers, "You feared to hurt me, because Baruch Hu figured that the take for good." Are you familiar with that statement? After his brothers, Yosef is already the ruler in Egypt, and
after they rediscovered him,
and he says, "Don't feel bad about what you did. Your intention was bad, but Providence has used it for good." Atom Khashabtum Alikim Khashobalilateva. He makes that statement. This is going on constantly. People are going on by doing whatever they want for their purposes. Providence utilizes. People came to Eretz Yisrael with the plan and full intention, and very, very carefully planned out establishing a socialist country, a Jewish socialist country. I don't know whether you are familiar with it. It was very carefully planned, and some of those methods are being used today. And it was even a very carefully planned campaign. There was at one time, right after 48, when there were only 600,000 people in this country. And the people who built it felt that it's much too small to be a country. And we have to bring in people. And the people to bring in from the